Change careers, break into new industries, transition into new roles, reinvent yourself and make the dent you want. This is the Second Breaks podcast.
Hello, my friend, this is Lou Blazer, and we are in episode 5 of the Second Breaks podcast. And today I'm very excited to introduce you to Shane Moran, who used to be a cop, a detective with the New York City Police Department. And very specifically, he was with the scuba team. And if I read somewhere that the scuba team is an elite team, it's one of the few, if not the only, full-time law enforcement dive rescue and recovery teams in the country. And it handles everything that can possibly happen in and around the water, from air to sea, helicopter rescues to scouring sewers for explosives. And it presides over one of the toughest environments in the world, you know, the 500 miles around and under the waters of New York City. So, I mean, Shane, you can say, is a tough guy, right? He's not at all risk averse. He's used to taking risks. I mean, he jumped out of helicopters for a living, right? And yet, when he decided to quit that exciting and adrenaline pumping world, for the equally exciting world of business, he still took the time. It was a different kind of risk for him, right? So he took his time and he took a very diligent approach before committing to early retirement so that he could devote his time to his growing business. In this episode, Shane and I discuss how he weighed his decisions to leave the police force 5 years shy of full retirement. So he talks about the ramifications of that decision, leaving, you know, a lot of money on the table because he's walking away from full-time pension so that he could run the growing health and fitness company that he co-founded with his partner, Emma Galland. So with that, let me transition you to this conversation with Shane, and then I'll catch you at the back end. Shane, thank you so much for joining us here at Second Breaks.
Thank you for having me.
I was wondering, would you mind so much maybe giving a little bit of introduction about who you are, and then what we could maybe start with who you are today, and then we'll walk backwards, find out what you were doing before then. How's that?
Sure, sounds good. My name's Shane Moran, and I'm a co-founder of Goji Fitness, which is a fitness nutrition company based in Brooklyn, New York, and we make a product called Zenberry. I'm basically, you know, me and my partner, we wear many hats, and I'm kind of R&D, marketing, production. You know, we do a little bit of everything. So it, you know, it's a lot at times, but we bounce stuff off each other, and it works pretty well.
I think you've only been doing this, what, 3 years maybe, or 4 years, or I can't remember.
Yeah, the company was formed a little over 3 years ago, and we had both had day jobs, and my partner went into the business full time first, and then I left my career a year later. Probably I was a detective with the New York City Police Department. I was in for 15 years roughly, and I was a detective with the NYPD scuba team. So we did search and rescue, evidence searches under the rivers, under all the water. We patrolled all the waterways in New York City, and we had two divers on the helicopter 24/7. So it was not the usual career for most people. I was in scuba for 12 years, roughly 12 years, and it got to the point where it was very busy to do both, you know, the business and my day job. Day and night job, because we did shift work. We worked overnights and then days. So it was a lot of stress.
I can just imagine, because you were full-time with NYPD then.
Yeah. And we worked 12-hour tours. We worked overnight from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And then we'd have a few days off, and then we'd do 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Oh, my goodness.
So you're constantly shifting gears, and you're trying to get things done during the day after you worked all night long. It wears you out. and I'm not as young as I used to be. So I started to feel the hours. When I was younger, I didn't feel it as much. You know, you go work all night and then you come, go take a short nap and then you're good to go. And once I hit my 40s, it wasn't so easy.
You look like you must be blessed with great genes, because you look like you're, people are going to watch this video are going to say, what is he talking about? He looks like he's 23.
I'm going to be 42 on the 16th of March.
Oh my goodness. So, you are blessed.
I think it's the sunblock. I keep sunblock.
There you go. So just curious, but when you said you were in the scuba team, does that mean the Hudson River? Is that East River? Is that what where you were?
We covered all the waterways all around New York City, and we even got deployed to, you know, other agencies that may not have had a dive team available. We'd go pretty far. We've been in the helicopter. We've been as far, you know, south, you know, down to the shore in New Jersey. We've had special jobs where we've actually gone, you know, up north and different places where we've been requested by other, but mostly in New York City, all the lakes, rivers, ponds, you know, I've been under most of them.
Oh, oh my goodness. How interesting.
In good weather and some really bad weather. So, yeah.
Like even in the icy winter New York weather.
Yeah, we dive all winter. Gets a little complicated when, you know, through the winters we had a lot of ice on the rivers, you know, ice flows. Gets real dangerous that you can't really dive because those things weigh tons. So... my uncle was a police officer. I think I had a New Zealand police officer. You know, he married into the family through my aunt, and it must have made a big impression on me as a little. I was 7 years old, I think. And I was like, wow, you know, little kids, like with cops, firemen. And it grew into something more mature later, and I went to college, got a degree in criminal justice, and, you know, wanted to be in law enforcement. And I grew up in the New York City area. I was just over the George Washington Bridge in New Jersey. And so this was, you know, the metropolitan area. So I wanted to be in the city. And in 2000, I got on the job, and I was in the South Bronx on patrol before I got into scuba. I didn't even know there was a scuba team until I was already there as a police officer, a rookie police officer. And somebody came and said, hey, we're giving a test. It's a really difficult physical test to get in. Only about 5% can pass. So I was like, hey, I'm in good shape. Let me try. Cause patrol is very stressful. It's one of the most important parts of the police department, but it's got the least amount of prestige and it gets the most amount of stress. But you also do the most amount of good too. But it was wearing me out after it being an intense, busy place. I was looking to see other things and do other things than stay on patrol. And the opportunity came up. I really didn't think I was going to get picked up because I only had 3 years on the job. And I took the test and I did great. The written test is really difficult. I passed that. You had to be a diver before, so I had some experience diving. And they picked me up and in summer of 2002, and I was there for the next 12 years. Well, it was time to move on.
Now, I mean, just as a general question, people who normally retire from the police force, what's the normal path they take after that? I mean, certainly not going into business, probably.
One of my instructors in the academy had his own business while he was already there, you know, and he told every one of us, make your own business while you're still here because you have benefits, you have solid pay, you know, it's steady work, you're not, you know, and he says, create a business for yourself because after you retire, it's not like you're on easy street, you know, it's not like, well, I'm a millionaire now, I can just sit back. If you have a kid in the house and your kid's going to college, you're going to need more income. He says, you got to set the groundwork to prepare for that. If you do everything perfectly and you have, you know, you invest well and you have your 457 is ready to go and you've maxed out on everything you can possibly do, maybe you can just never have to work again. But inflation eats away at your pension gradually, you know, so 20 years after you retire, the money you're bringing in isn't worth what it was when you retired. So you got to plan for that. So I always had a mindset that I had this itch when I was I guess my whole life, I had this itch that I didn't know what it was, but I think it was to be an entrepreneur, to be my own businessman, you know, to run my own company, not have anybody tell me what to do, as risky as that can be and stressful. I always felt that there was, and I didn't realize it until later in my career. And I knew I wanted to own my own business, but I didn't know what.
And so how did this come about? This was this the first opportunity that you had branching into entrepreneurship, Goju Fitness, or was there something else that you maybe tried before this?
No, this was actually the first. And it really was my partner, Emma, who, you know, had a great career of her own. And she started, she was always interested in health and fitness. And she taught spin classes on the side, just partially for fun. And it's so why not get paid to work out and then rather than actually pay to go take spin classes. And she really enjoyed being in front of the class and teaching and designing, you know, so she kind of, and then she got into nutrition and went to school and graduated, and it kind of just grew from there. She's like, I want to create a business. We started, and I was working with her, creating the name, you're doing the little things. And it started from there, and she was doing that on her own, both things. And she's like, it's doing pretty well. I think I want to leave. And this is kind of the, in her other career, it was kind of like either she's got to go all in or she's got to give up the business, because just the way that it worked, you either had to put everything in and you can't even deal with the business because it's against procedures, policies. And so she had to make a choice, and she's like, I'm taking the hard choice. I'm like, I backed her up on that. I said, well, you, to be happy, you've got to be happy. Yeah, I've always believed that, you know, you've got to figure out what makes you happy and do it. So she did that, and I'm still in my career. And then we created a product called Zenberry, which I was getting more and more involved with, which is, it's a vegan superfood nutrition powder that's actually has no junk in it and tastes good. And I'm an athlete. I'm a competitive athlete. I've been racing bicycles for 12, 13 years now. And so I've always been looking at nutrition.
This is why you look like you're 23.
Maybe. I don't know. I've seen a lot of cyclists that I know. We all look a little younger than.
There you go. Sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I got more involved with that, and it started to become fun. I was really unhappy at work, mostly due to the schedule. So I wasn't happy, and it took a long time for me to kind of make that decision, but it was getting to the point where I either had to walk away from Zenberry and just forget it because it was just getting too big. And then it may not have even continued because Emma was so busy with the other half of the business. So it got to that point where, same as she was, you know, it's kind of like, what do I do? And if I were super happy with the other part of my day job, I probably maybe would have tried to tough it out, but I was really looking for a reason to leave. So
it was like, if I understand you correctly, it was like whether you would stay on till maybe reach the 20-year, yeah, like finish the full 20 before you left the force, or is this the time to make a jump and leave? And, yeah, and you chose the latter, obviously.
Yeah, which is a scary thing when you're that far into your pension and you have such a secure job and benefits, and you don't get that very often anymore in this country. And even police officers today here in the city don't get what I had. It's 20, now I think it's 23 or 25 years to retirement. There are a bunch of things with the pension that are different, so they're not going to get as good a deal as we had before. So to walk away from that, it was a huge, huge risk. And I left a lot of money on the table. And everyone's telling me, you're crazy. What's the matter with you? You're insane. And it wasn't like I just went, I'm leaving, bye. You know, it was a very, very long process, and I wrestled with it for a year.
For a year before you made the final decision. Yeah,
really did it.
Was there an opportunity to do part time? Was that even like? Are you allowed to go part time
in
the force?
Yeah, either you're in or you're out. I even looked at trying to find a different place to go within the police department, out of scuba maybe, to get a different schedule. But then if I got off that shift schedule, I was going to be kind of working business hours, and then how do I work? And that's 5 days a week. And so we worked in scuba 3 days on and then you had 3 days off, and then you did nights, and then you could do work during the day. So a lot of guys would love the schedule because while it's exhausting, you could actually do a pretty good side business because you had so much free time, although you work just as hard and just as many hours, but it's kind of the way it's structured. You're not there 5 days a week. I looked into that, but it would have maybe made me a little happier in that career path, but not, I wouldn't be able to do Zenberry. I wouldn't be able to continue into the business as much as I have.
No, by then the business was Emma by then full time in the business already, or was she still?
She was out. She left a year, at least a year before I did. So she was already in there full time.
Okay.
Doing things, and we were, you know, most businesses the first few years you don't usually do well. You may usually don't even break even, and we were turning us, you know, a profit. You know, so it was encouraging.
That's good. So you were, I'm sure your colleagues probably in the Forge are probably saying, what are you thinking? What are you doing? There's just 5 years left. Why don't you just finish it? And, you know, that kind of stuff. And so, and I don't know, I mean, obviously you had a partner that was supporting your decision. But how did you manage, I guess, because that's what I find when I talk to people who are making this decision. That's one of the most difficult things they've had to face is that, you know, family and friends, sometimes they try to not, they try to tell you don't leave your stable thing.
I would say,
right?
90% tried to talk me out of it.
Yeah. How did you manage that? What was going on in your head when you were making that decision? You know,
it was difficult, especially with my background. I mean, my family, we were, you know, working class, you know, lower middle class. When I was a kid, we didn't have a lot of money. It was basically my family were, you know, plumbers and electricians and construction workers and mechanics. So it was like, you got to work. You work for an hour, you get paid for an hour. You do, you know, it's kind of drilled into my head. It's in my being, you know. So even today when I'm doing the business, it's kind of like, I feel like even though I'm working 16 hours sometimes, I feel like I didn't work because I'm still at home, number one. And I may have been doing stuff on a website or online or, and you're like, did I really work today? Because my body's telling me, no, you should be swinging a hammer or punching a clock. So it's hard to get your brain away from punching a clock, trading your hours for the money you're going to get.
Whereas the building your business
right? When you have a business, it's totally different mindset. So it was difficult to even contemplate that. Emma's got a different point. Her father's a lifelong entrepreneur. You know, so she has this whole, she's seen businesses from a little child, him build businesses and then you know, sell them or go move on to something else and build them. He had an amazing you know, business life and retired early and is very comfortable. So she has this different way of looking at it where it's a little more normal for her than for me. But it was difficult and took me a year of sleepless nights of finally, you know, when you go down to the pension section, you sign off going, okay, I'm out of here. it's a stressful day. And you're like, okay, now what do I do?
Did you do anything else to sort of help you get acclimated to this new life that you're building?
Well, before I left, I did a lot of research. I, you know, really bounced the idea off a lot of people. And we've made mistakes throughout, if anybody does when you're in a new business. But having that, I knew that when I would have reached my retirement, I will be getting partial retirement and my benefits. So I know there's a light at the end of the tunnel, meaning that it's not going to be scraping by just on what we make in the company. That I do have something coming, so it's not like I'm just on my own, like many people would be, like Emma is. And we have some real estate, we have the house we own, you know, we have certain things that are there, but it's still a huge risk. And I've always been a risk taker, though, I jumped out of helicopters into the East River for a living. So
I was about to say
I'm not risk averse. But financial risk is a little different, you know. When I went to college and I paid my way through college, I was in debt for a long. I don't think I paid off my college loans until I was 38. So I know what it's like to be living from paycheck to paycheck. So I knew I was very comfortable where I was although I wasn't happy. So I was like, I was really looking for happiness. Money has never been a huge motivator for me. It's not like I'm chasing dollar bills everywhere. I was always looking for happiness, and I knew I wasn't happy. It wasn't that I was just unhappy with my job. I knew I was doing the wrong thing. I knew this job, I had done my job. I'd done a lot of good things with the job, but I knew that there was something else in this world for me to do. Mm-hmm. And
it's like you probably evolved, right? Yeah. So there was a part, it was a part in your life where that was what you wanted. And then, you evolved to wanting to do something else or being something different.
Yeah. I felt like I could contribute more somewhere else. I was kind of bored where I was and tired and not having fun. And it was trickling down into my relationship. Like it wasn't fun. I wasn't fun to be around when you're exhausted all the time. If you're walking around like a zombie, it's hard to have fun. So usually only like 6 days of the month, I would feel like a normal person. the rest of the time, I was just usually just felt like you've been up all night or just recovering from that. So those things, and I felt it was harming my health, that sleep deprivation, which doing some research long before this, studies are showing that shift work like that is actually a carcinogen. It actually shortens your lifespan. So, okay. I think the longest I was awake was 3 days.
I was like that for years when I was in my corporate job. I got by with, and I wore it like a badge. Like, oh, I get by, with 4 hours sleep or 5 hours sleep. And I wore it like a badge of honor of some sort that I could,
It's crazy. Now, exactly. It took me a while to get used to. I suffered from insomnia really badly because of the shift work, and it took me a while, about a year, before I started to feel in a routine again. Insomnia still hits me sometimes when I have some stress and then I'm awake. There's no way I'm sleeping. But I've kind of gotten into a routine where I usually get 7 to 8 hours of sleep every night. And I haven't done that in 15 years because I've always been doing like shift work. It's never been I go to bed every night at the same time and I wake up at the same time. It was never that way. It was always different. It took me a while to get used to that. But it was a major adjustment to leave that, because you kind of have your identity a little bit wrapped up into it too, and then come to this and you're kind of like, okay, what am I? It's like I rattled off some of my titles, but do I really feel like I'm head of marketing? I don't know. I'm just, the one thing I do know I really feel is when we're in production and we're producing Zenberry at our organic kitchen and then I know I'm in charge, because then it's much more of what I was raised like. It's like, okay, we're taking these ingredients and we're doing this. We're lifting boxes. We're mixing stuff. We're packaging, putting labels on. It's like, and then you're done. I'm like, whew, we're done. Okay. I feel like, it was a day of work. Not that the other stuff isn't work, but it's more like blue collar work that I was used to my whole life.
Yes. Yeah. So was looking back though, Shane, was the financial risk part the biggest challenge that you faced when you were making that decision? Or was there something else if you were to think back to the time when you were, trying to figure out, do I do this now? Do I wait 5 years from now? Was the financial risk?
Financial risk was the biggest.
Okay.
Because not so much your paycheck every day, but it's just the amount of, the amount on the table. If you figure, if you live, to be 80, 85, you do the math of how much that pension is worth over that time period, it's $1 million, several million dollars. And you're, depending on how long you live, and to walk away from that, leaving a big percentage of that on the table that you have no right to, even though you put in the time, you got to reach that benchmark to get that. And I understand that. But as long as I had things secure, like I have a condo that I own, but I love it. I love the area it's in. I rented my beloved condo out like about a year before I left. And I still rent that out, so there's certain things I sacrificed, I'm in Brooklyn full time, but before I was split my time between Brooklyn and then outside of the city. And, now I'm in Brooklyn full time. It took a big adjustment. Although I've lived in the city before, it was a big adjustment at this point in my life to be back here full time. My family and most of my friends are outside of Brooklyn. So it was tough, but the biggest one was the financial, to make sure that, okay, things are okay. I saved every penny. That's the other thing. Before anybody jumps into starting your own business, like, have a really good nest egg ready to save you or sustain you for the lean times. So I packed away every penny I could, saved everything I could, just hard cash just to have in case, in savings and besides, you know, retirement and stuff like that, investments. But this was like, you know, liquid, ready to
go. Excellent insights. Yes, absolutely. Because that's the only way that, that's the only way to sort of manage that risk, right? Or that
and the stress
fear associated. Yeah, exactly. You know, okay. Exactly.
I have enough money liquid that I can sustain my basic living standard for a year or two, you know, better mm-hmm. for 2 years. And then every month that you don't have to touch it, you're like, yeah, it's a win.
Yes,
you know,
right. So exactly.
You know, yeah. And then whenever you do touch it, I always try to put it right back, you know, if I ever do.
Yes. Yeah, but absolutely, because otherwise you can't focus. If you're always stressed about that, you can't focus on building the new career that you're building or the new business that you're building, right? That's great. So then you made the decision to quit, and now you're full time. You've been full time with Goju Fitness. I can't remember, a year, there, 2 years now.
It'll be 2 years in June.
Uh huh. And what does a day look like for you? Without the diving into the icy water.
I get up in the morning. I usually, you know, I make my tea and my breakfast, and I come right to my computer and start checking email. I'm guilty of this. As soon as I wake up, I'm in bed on my phone checking my emails, sometimes responding to them as you're laying there. And I'll start with that, checking emails, and then every day is kind of different because you never know what's in store. We always have different projects and promotions. And my main focus is Zenbrae, but I'll also help Emma with a lot of the other things with the fitness. We shoot videos. We, you know, there's all the logistics behind everything, responding to emails. And then I'm always working with designers. I'm always working on new projects, new formulas. So it's kind of like we have these products that are going, but I'm still working on new ones coming up. And then it's just, there's always constant, you know, licensing, certifications, you know, you deal with lawyers and a lot of marketing thing, you know, thing.
Yeah. Cause Zenberry is considered a food.
Yeah.
So it's FDA regulated.
No, we're USDA and we're under
the
Department of Agriculture.
So
you get, like, actually tomorrow we have a, when we move kitchens, you know, a lot of people use shift kitchens because, you know, when you're a startup, you don't have $150,000 to build a commercial kitchen you don't need a commercial kitchen every day. So rent one monthly. So what you do is you rent a space in a large commercial kitchen. They're called, food incubators. They're all over Brooklyn and Harlem. So we moved from one that was in Sunset Park. We moved to one in Long Island City. But when you move, you have to get re-inspected, even though you passed the inspection the first time. Because they figure, like, you moved, like, say you moved your business to a new, you know. So I understand why that's still set in the old way. So we got to go through so tomorrow I have to meet the inspector. We go through the whole thing. So I handle all of that, the inspections, all the certifications. And then when we produce, you know, it's like I explained, we're in the kitchen mixing, you know, I do all the ordering ingredients and.
I was going to say, so the business, Zenberry, that's the primary, so it's a part of the primary business is a product based business, right?
Well,
so
it's a 50-50 about Goju Fitness is the parent company and, mm-hmm. Zenberry is a product that we make.
So gotcha.
Goju Fitness is, you know, personal training, nutrition counseling, health.
The wellness, overall wellness sort of thing, yeah.
Uh-huh. Everything to do with that. And then we have Zenberry as a product that we created with a partner of ours. And it's, people love it. So it's been growing and expanding and, you know, it's a constant learning process of getting through distribution and, you know, it's fascinating.
Wow. And when you because I you didn't buy Zenberry, like you didn't purchase an ongoing business, right? You started this from the beginning, from the scratch.
I actually
created
the name. I actually I take credit for that.
Yes.
It's really difficult creating a name. I'm sure you know.
Oh, yes.
Going through, you have to go through the trademark office. You're like, that's taken. You search the websites. It's taken.
Right. Yeah. So, you were in the force. You were in NYPD before, and then Emma was in business. Where did you get, where did this product development of Zenberry come from? Like, what was the initial inspiration for that? Do you remember?
Yeah, I was always making smoothies. I'm a competitive cyclist, so after a long day of riding, you really want to replenish your nutrition within 30 minutes after you're done. So you can recover, the better you recover, the more you can ride, the harder you can ride, and then the stronger you'll get. So I was always mixing concoctions, and some of them were horrendous. You know, you can barely drink. Why did I put that in there? And Emma was interested in that too because of just the nutrition aspect of it. And another nutritionist friend of Emma's and now mine we worked together and created this formula. It started out with two. And now we have four different ones. We wanted something that worked and didn't have junk in it. Because if you really look at the labels and you read things, a lot of them aren't that good for you. Or they have just too much sugar or the wrong kinds of sugar or fillers or some sort of chemicals or there's dairy in there. So we wanted to create something. And there are a few out there that worked, but they just tasted terrible. So you're just trying to get them down.
I know. I tried some.
Yeah. And so that was the inspiration for that. And theirs was the nutrition and health aspect of mine too. And mine was kind of, I had the athlete input. Like, does this stuff work for athletes like me who I ride my bike 12,000 miles a year. Is that going to help me recover better? And I've been a vegetarian for 12 years now. So I'm almost vegan, but I wouldn't call myself a vegan. But I eat very little dairy. I eat fish occasionally, but no meat. The vegan aspect of it was really fascinating to me. And like, because the first thing anybody asks me, especially athletes, where do you get your protein and how can you compete if you're not eating meat? And, you know, you look at the research and the data, the vegans perform just as well as omnivores, you know, so. If you're if you're an unhealthy vegan or you're an unhealthy omnivore, that's not going to help you. So a lot of people focus on unhealthy vegans. They can barely walk up the stairs. I'm like, well, maybe they're not eating the right foods. You know, there's a hole to the one person.
Just because you're a vegan doesn't make you healthy.
Yeah, and if anything, I've gotten better and faster and stronger.
Gotcha.
My weight's much more stable as an athlete.
So is Zenberry, are they supplements or meals in and of themselves? Like, how do you?
It can be either. That's one of the things I like about it. It's very versatile, especially for someone like me who sometimes I'm doing a 4-hour ride. I need a lot of calories. And then when I'm getting close to big races, I really try to get my weight down as low as I can. And a lot of people don't think that, you ride so many miles, you can eat whatever you want. It's not the case. Your body gets adapted and very efficient at whatever activity you're doing, especially in endurance sport. And so I need fewer and fewer calories to go those miles, which is bad because I do those miles and then I still will gain weight. And then if you stop doing those miles, you gain weight pretty fast unless you adjust your eating. So Zenberry by itself has between 70 and 80 calories if you mix it with water. So it's great for people who are trying to lose weight or just want to have a supplement to make sure they're getting everything they need. And then if you want a little more, you want to make it more of a meal replacement, then I use almond milk. I'll throw some nuts, some hemp seeds. I always throw a banana, some fruit. So after a big long ride, I'll load that up into it's a meal. But it still has the things I need in it. And the thing I like about it still tastes good. Before we went and produced, a few weeks ago, we had run out of our own personal supply of Zenberry, and Em and I were like, "Oh my god, I'm dying!" So we're trying to like make our own smoothies with other stuff until we went and made our next production. And it just didn't work. We're like, wow, we really are spoiled. We were just like, tempeh is really good. we were amazed that, you know, we've gotten so used to it.
So people who are interested in checking them out, are they available in stores or just through your website? Oh, or website, how do people find out about tempeh?
We have one. We have a studio in Tribeca in New York City that sells. So it's called Aqua Studio. It's on Franklin Street. They sell out of there. It's like a really unique underwater cycling. So it's from Europe. It's really, really, I've taken one or two classes. Emma teaches there. They carry our products there, and it's we're looking to expand into other areas, but yeah, distribution's tough. It's a process to get in, and it's especially in New York, it's very competitive. So we're in the process of getting those things into stores more, but mostly we sell online. We sell internationally.
And yeah, I was going to say, and ship it anywhere,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, right. So one last question, if you don't mind, Shane. A lot of people who listen or watch the Second Breaks, my audience, are usually people who are thinking about pursuing a career, a different career, pursuing a dream, you know, something that they've always wanted to do or something new that they've discovered. And I offer them these interviews as examples of people who've taken that leap, right? Who've gone ahead and pursued a dream. And so if you wouldn't mind, if you could share an advice or two, given that you've done this yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So would you mind giving them an advice or two?
Yeah, I based on my experience, I mean, changing a career, like changing your to another job is a little different than starting your own business. But there are things that cross over. One, I would do my research. Really look into the financials, your stability, the risk you're taking, leaving if you're taking a pay cut. Or if you're starting your own business, you really want to try to get that up and running while you're still working your job so you still have income. It won't be as stressful. And when it gets to the point where it's that busy, usually you'll be stable enough to know if maybe I can leave. Number two, I would really save as much as I can to take some of the stress out the first few years. The first few years are the most difficult. And many businesses fail. So if you're going to start your own business, really, really have that set and make sure you have everything in order before you go, because I can see how stressful it can be. That if you're going to switch careers, you know, you really got to look at what's going to make you happy. And you know, the saying, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. You know, it's so you may not be happy even in that career, but you want to, you know, really think about it long and hard. And the other thing I'll say is money is overrated. I mean, I think money is essential. Don't get me wrong. And you definitely need it. But the amount of income that we gave up, Emma and I together, we're definitely happier today, even though we don't have a lot of money, disposable income. And that's a wake-up call, because you're always like, you're going, okay, I need this. And once I get that, and then I'll be, you know, I used to tell guys who were telling me not to leave, I say, life's too short. You know, I know I'm very unhappy. You know, you're going to stay at a job. I mean, luckily, I only had 20 years to do, but some of my friends are miserable in their jobs, and they haven't, they're in their mid 40s. They still have another 20 years to go in misery. And is that really the goal in our lives? Is just to be miserable, work for the weekend and your 2 weeks vacation, and then retire at 65 and then die 10 years later, or hopefully longer. But you know, is that really the goal, or can you get by on less? You know, and I sacrificed a lot of things that I loved to do where I am. But I think overall, I'm happier. Although I have some bad days, don't get me wrong. It's not all rainbows and sunshine, of course. But that's my core advice for people. Take it slow and don't rush into anything. Definitely. It took me a year.
Take it slow. Don't rush into anything. That's great. Yeah. That's brilliant. Yeah. Thank you so much, Shane. I absolutely love this conversation with you, and I'm sure it's going to be inspiring to a lot of people who watch it and read your story. So thank you so much for sparing us, you know, your morning.
Oh, no problem. Thank you very much for having me. I had a lot of fun.
My key takeaway from that conversation is the importance of preparation. Now, Shane was talking about preparation in the context of starting a business, but really, whenever we are looking to make a change in our career, in our lives, you know, preparation is key. Weighing the ramifications, making sure that we understand the ramifications of our decisions so that we could fully embrace the sacrifices that we may have to make in order to achieve the thing that we want to achieve. So that's my key takeaway. What about you? What's your takeaway? You can send me an email, lou@secondbreaks.com, or you can head on over at secondbreaks.com/episode5 and leave a comment there and let's start a conversation, okay? Now, with respect to the podcast, it is extremely important for me that you leave a rating and review, and if you subscribe to the show on iTunes, because that is one way that we can get the show in front of the people who really could use the information, right? The people who are looking to make a change in their careers, to improve their careers. This is your rating, your review, your subscription on iTunes will help get the show in front of those people. So I would really appreciate it if you head on over to iTunes and do that. Thank you so much. Now, next week, my guest is Melissa Dinwiddie, my favorite creativity expert, and we are talking about everything creativity and how to bring in creativity in our work life. And so, see, that's one more reason why you want to subscribe to iTunes so that you don't have to remember to download the episode. It'll just automatically show up in your device. So with that, I am signing off. I hope to talk to you next week. Keep on making your debt, my friend. Cool beans.
This is the Second Breaks podcast.